everyone. This is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today, we're excited to have Søren Bjørn on the show. Søren is the president of Driscoll's of the Americas, the leading global brand for fresh berries. In his role, he leads the largest business unit for Driscoll's and is responsible for all aspects of the business enterprise, from the strategic planning process to its financial success. Family-owned for more than 100 years, Driscoll's works with more than 700 independent growers around the world to create shared value in the communities where Driscoll's berries are grown. Søren has led Driscoll's global research and breeding programs, which focus on developing proprietary seedlings in order to deliver great-tasting berries to consumers. This superior flavor is a competitive differentiator and one of the primary reasons Driscoll's is the market leader in fresh berries. Looking forward to this one. I eat my fruit and veg every day, especially my organic fruit, and I love berries. Have it with my oatmeal every morning, blueberries. So looking forward to what he has to say. Right, ladies, over to you.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for grabbing Takeout with us. And we are so excited to have another interview in our series with the Organic Produce Network and talk to you about something, that is just so sweet. This is going to be a great conversation about one of our favorite foods and a company that is really changing the game in terms of its support of farmers. And a lot of that has to do with their heritage, which we'll dive into. Robin, I was just saying, you know, one of the things for me when I moved back to Columbus, Ohio, I was like, well, if I can't find my organic berries, I'm going to be pretty frustrated. And I want to be able to get organic berries all year round. And the other day I was at Target and saw Driscoll's both blackberries and raspberries. And I've just never, I was like a kid. I got home and I'm like, oh, I know exactly what I want on my plate. You know, here I get to just snack on a few of these. And of course, knowing they're so good for me makes such a difference too. So I'm just thrilled to have this conversation and, you know, dive into a little bit more about the world of berries and get to know Driscoll's better.
Oh, I am too. And I think, you know, the strawberry category, I mean, it's one of the ones that everybody realizes it's so important, and we can start to make these really conscious decisions as consumers. And as we do, when the brands respond, when a brand like Driscoll's is responding and saying, we understand that the consumer wants organic strawberries year round, that is totally a massive request by the consumer. And I think most people don't realize. And yet, unfortunately, our expectations as 21st century consumers is that we should be able to get organic strawberries on demand 24/7, 365 days a year. And I think about my grandmother, who just recently passed at almost 108 years old. I mean, she was so aware of the cycles, and she was so aware of the seasonality of different fruits. And she was so mindful of canning and jarring and all these things. And yet here we are as 21st century consumers with Amazon, Amazon Prime, Amazon Fresh, you know, the way we can have all of these things at our fingertips year round. And I really have a lot of respect for the executives that are trying to meet that demand, because it's an unprecedented ask. It has never before existed in history of these CEOs, of these presidents, and of these executives. So I'm so thrilled for our guest today.
Yeah, this is going to be really exciting. So, you know what, I'll actually, just because of the whole farmer conversation, let me throw it over to you, Robin, to introduce Søren and welcome him. And let's dive into, you know, I think one of the key pieces to your point about meeting the demand is, how do we support the farmers, the growers that are growing these berries, to your point, to do it all year round?
Yeah, and I want to thank Matt Seely and the Organic Produce Network for setting this up. Søren Bjørn is the president of Driscoll's of the Americas. It is the leading global brand for fresh berries. And I was recently in New Zealand. They were talking about Driscoll's. Everybody here in the U.S. obviously knows who Driscoll's is. What I think is really, really cool and very unique and special about this company is that it is family owned, and it has been for over 100 years, and that they work with more than 700 independent growers around the world to create this shared value. And I think, you know, you have to step back and say, what does that mean? We are nothing, none of us, without our farmers. We couldn't go a day without our farmers. And the companies that really recognize and value the incredible importance and worth of that role in our society are the ones that we really need to get behind. And I think Driscoll's is doing an incredible job of that, to say, we recognize we've got 700 independent growers. How can we support these people? How can we treat them as CEOs of these multinational operations that they actually are? And we're thrilled, Søren, to have you on. And thank you so much for making the time today.
Very excited to be here, and congrats to both of you. You guys do a fantastic job and getting a great message out there. So glad to be here.
So let's really dive into it. I mean, managing 700 independent growers around the world, I mean, these are all guys that are, you know, in a way, CEOs of all of their independent business operations. What does that look like from your lens?
So that's not a small challenge. I mean, you know, these growers truly are independent and they run their own business. And, you know, a lot of times we have, you know, very similar objectives about succeeding in the marketplace, but sometimes they have their own, you know, objectives of what they are trying to accomplish with their business. And so, you know, it's really our job to try to align what we're trying to do, you know, which is delighting consumers every day, and what they are trying to do as, you know, business owners with their business and with their family, to try to make sure that for a lot of them, that they have a business not only for the current generation and the next generation. So that takes a lot of coordination and a lot of back and forth to make that happen. We've been very fortunate that we have been, you know, quite successful at it for a long time. So we probably have a little bit of the formula down.
I think when you're talking about the formula, you know, I just have to, I rarely take off my healthcare practitioner hat. So I'm just going to acknowledge that I've got that hat on right now. And, you know, I think about berries, and the amazing thing about berries is that they are consistently the it ingredient on every diet. So, you know, what I love about that, you know, whether somebody is, you know, following a paleo diet, or, you know, they're trying to incorporate more plants, or they're looking to lower their sugar. But even keto, you know, on a keto plan, you can incorporate berries. And so I think they're so important for, you know, as we look to create realistic nutrition plans to help people either from a preventative health standpoint or to help people get healthy and heal from disease. And, you know, we've all had that moment where, like, either at school when we were kids, or, you know, if we're feeding kids, or if we're in the hospital, or, you know, in anywhere where there's food service, where we've taken a bite of a vegetable or a fruit and it just doesn't taste delicious. And when you have that experience with a fruit, it's hard to then crave, you know, and want that. And so to your point of delighting the consumer, obviously you're delighting the consumer in so many households across the country. What I'd love to understand is how can we, and maybe there's already in place a model, but how can we continue to support you and your farmers to get berries like Driscoll's? Like, I think if you were on my, you know, at school lunches or in a hospital plate, we would be helping people heal with better nutrition, being delicious, you know, and those bites that are so healing. So tell me a little bit about that. Is that something that you guys are currently involved in, or is that a place that you could see yourself going? And if so, what resources would be needed?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, always looking for opportunities to where can you create, you know, greater demand. And we see, you know, a lot of opportunities. So right now, you know, one of our real success stories is actually get into the universities, so into the cafeterias. And so we got into University of Massachusetts, serving over 30,000 students every single day. And they now have berries available, you know, not only for breakfast, but for lunch and for dinner. And so if you create those opportunities to really put berries in front of consumers, you know, at any time of day, they will find a way to incorporate berries into their diet. And so, you know, whether it's on your yogurt in the morning, whether it's on a salad for lunch, or whether it's, you know, as part of a side dish, you know, for dinner, you know, I mean, berries are so easy to work with, you know, they're convenient, you know, you don't really have to do much to them, take the calyx off the strawberry, that's about it, you know, wash them and then put them, you know, on as ingredient. And so, you know, they're convenient, they're healthy, they taste good. That's a rare combination for fruits and vegetables. And so, you know, that is the tremendous advantage we have in the berry category, is we're sort of right in the sweet spot of where the consumer wants to be. And, but I think other categories, you know, within fruits and vegetables can learn from that. And so if you are in a category where, you know, it's not convenient or it doesn't taste that great, you know, what can you do to help move that along? And so, you know, we look at a lot of other fruit categories where, well, maybe for a long time, they didn't improve the flavor, and you can see the consumption declining. And when we run into colleagues from some of those industries, you know, we always encourage them to try to say, okay, well, what can you do to really enhance the consumer experience? Because in the end, that's what matters. You know, we can all be on diets and have all sorts of recommendations, but we're not very likely to eat food that does not taste good. So that's the key.
I mean, it really is so fundamentally straightforward and simple. And I do think as an executive of a food company, it is so rare to hear someone speak the way you do about, like, this product actually just sells itself. We don't have to do anything except put it out in the cafeteria in front of a bunch of college kids, and they're going to use it. And I think it's extraordinary, and it sort of speaks to the incredible power of, and this is really Ashley's expertise, this kind of better nutrition, food education, food knowledge, and how that can become so powerful in our health. And really, it's just marrying what the consumer knows he or she wants with access. And I think access is a conversation that continues to emerge. And I think probably one of the most heartaching issues that I've seen is that for so many of our growers across the Midwest, they don't actually have access to fresh groceries and fresh grocery stores and food a lot of the time. And I look at the debt levels that some of these farmers are under, and the fact that younger generations are sort of looking at them and saying, I don't know if I want to go into that as a business. What are the challenges that are unique to the berry industry, and what are you guys doing to recruit that next generation of growers into this?
Yeah, there's no greater issue in our industry than labor. We happen to be in one of the categories that's the most labor intensive. You know, berries are highly fragile. If we want to make sure they taste good, then they tend to be a little bit softer and more fragile to handle. So we use a lot of labor in our industry. Now, the reality is that 75% of all the fruits and vegetables grown in this country, in the United States, is still harvested by hand. And that workforce is shrinking very, very fast. I'll give you an example. The age of an average strawberry harvester in California right now is going up by half a year per year. Okay. And if you know that most strawberry harvesters kind of age out of harvesting strawberries at around 35 to 40, it doesn't take much to figure out that we are in an existential crisis in our industry in the United States if we cannot solve for labor supply. So that's you know, immigration reform first and foremost. Okay. It's, you know, it's making sure the workforce that's here today can be legal, but also making sure that there is a source of supply of labor going forward. Without that, our industry will shrink, and it actually is shrinking in California already, and it will continue to shrink because that burden really falls on the farmer or the grower.
They don't want to jump.
Get the people. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I jump in on something like that? Because, you know, one of the arguments people will say is, well, if we really address this as an immigration issue, then this creates jobs for Americans, and Americans could come in and serve as harvesters on farms. And yet there are studies out of North Carolina that'll tell you when that opportunity is presented, that is not the case. What are you guys doing to actively recruit in terms of that harvesting workforce? And what can we be doing as voices in the food industry to help support that?
Well, there's certainly more things we can do locally, but I can tell you we have programs with local high schools and local colleges where we're not only trying to get you know, young people to come and harvest, but we're actually adding to that program an educational element where they get to learn really about sort of the Driscoll side of the business. So maybe they want to come in and they're willing to, you know, help out with the harvest, okay? But they really see their career, you know, in a different part of the business. And so as part of that, we're exposing them to that. So we are doing, you know, those kinds of things to make sure we attract people into the industry. But the rate at which people disappearing from our industry is way, way faster. And the reality is, and the evidence is overwhelming, that most Americans, or hardly any Americans, want to do this work. It is not about the pay. It is almost sort of a cultural element, okay, that farm work is almost inappropriate in a modern society. That is not unique to the United States. This is true in Australia. This is true throughout Europe. In all those places where we operate, is an immigrant workforce, typically from quite a poor country, that comes and does that work. And so I think there's a cultural element we can help with, but there's also a political element. You know, we do need to look at the realities of what the situation is like, and we can't just say, oh, you know, just put the unemployed to work. We're talking about our food supply here. I don't think we want an unmotivated worker who is going to be the only person that ever touches the berry before you touch it when you take it out of your refrigerator at home. Don't forget that, there's only one person that ever touches your berry, and that's that farm worker that harvests the berry. That person needs to be a motivated person to make sure that the food is safe, is good quality, right? And it is at a reasonable cost. And the cost will go up, but that's okay. But most people ignore those other things. So people will say, oh, you know, why don't we just take people out of the prisons and they can go and work on the farms? Okay, well, what about the safety of our food supply if you do that? That is not a good idea. So I think the cultural elements we can all help with is for people to better understand where their food is coming from. And I think elevate farmers and farmers' work in the lives of all of us, okay? But then there's also the very practical, hey, there is a real problem here. We need to solve it. There's actually a pretty good bill going through the House of Representatives right now. Pretty good chance it's going to make it through the House. And hopefully the Senate will take up the Farm Worker Modernization Act. So we can all study that. We can look at that and support it. That would help. But I think more than anything else, more engaged in our food supply. And I think this is where you guys do a great job. You are highlighting all sorts of issues in our, you know, our modern food supply chain, and trying to make people more aware of what is happening in the food supply chain.
Yeah, I think, thank you for that. And if you have a link, or if we can get a link from your team to that, you know, it's great timing for us to just let our representatives know. And certainly as it goes to the Senate, if we can do anything to support you, I think that's really important for people to know that that modernization bill is occurring. And I think what we're talking about also is, you know, again, it's such a we want this thing that is so delicious. And also, as I was talking about, provides that health for us. And yet we're, you know, in order to do that, what I think we have to remember is who are those people that are then going to, you know, grow and, as you said, be the only person that touches our berries. And you know, I think we've seen in other industries, whether it's cacao or coffee or other places where, you know, we have such a demand, but we're then not taking care of the workers. And that can really create a problem, again, as you were saying, with the quality of what we receive. So for everybody who loves their delicious berries, whether it's for the delicious taste or for the health benefits, I think you really have to be thinking about if you want your college student or anybody else to be having the berries that often, you need to invest in, you know, the understanding the policies both at a local and a national level that will bring those to us. I want to do a little bit of a 180 here because I am just fascinated with how delicious Driscoll's berries are. So for me, you know, I always say better nutrition, better be delicious. Otherwise, we're not going to go back for it. And I was reading doing a little bit of research. You've got some great videos on the flavor development, but I'd love for you to speak for a little bit about what that recipe is. You know, is it the water? Is it the soil? Is it how you're, you know, over the years, your 700 different CEOs, as Robin was sharing, have gone in and kind of contributed a bit to the recipe? What gets us these just exceptionally delicious berries?
Well, it's the variety first, so it's really the genetics. So there's one thing that's really unique about Driscoll's berries is that when you buy a Driscoll's berry, it is different than any other berry. Okay, so it literally is a different variety. So a Driscoll strawberry variety, they're unique to Driscoll's. There would be no other company or no other brand that would have the same variety. And that goes back to that actually before even the Driscoll's company got created, our founders had created a strawberry breeding program, and they developed their own unique varieties. And so we do that today for all four berries: strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, and blueberries. And so when you buy Driscoll's berries, they are truly unique varieties. And our objective of the breeding programs is first and foremost to delight consumers. It is not first how much productivity can we get. It's not first what's the disease resistance. The first thing we try to deliver on is, you know, what is the consumer experience going to be like? And that's the flavor, it's the texture, you know, it's the, you know, appearance of the product, you know, it's those elements. And, you know, it's the flavor that brings the consumer back. You can make the berries look really beautiful. And I've also used the example of blackberries for a long time. We used to have these big, beautiful, very, very dark blackberries, and they just tasted like battery acid, you know? And so consumers would buy them because eye appeal, but they would never come back. And so nothing happened with the blackberry category. And we have completely changed that I actually think today that, you know, one of the best tasting Driscoll's berries is a Driscoll's blackberry in April. They are just amazing. And now the consumption is increasing, you know, at a, you know, high double digit rate per year, where for decades it went nowhere. And so it's really about the varieties and the focus over several generations on improving the flavor that makes Driscoll's berries, you know, truly unique and different.
You know, listening to you again, it's like the expertise here, to value that expertise and to think about the fact that if you take something that formerly tasted like battery acid that no little kid's ever going to want to put in her mouth, to something that is so sweet and so delicious that you don't even have to convince your five-year-old to try it, that's a huge health benefit. And I think about that comes, as you said, from generations and generations of expertise. And to compensate our farmers accordingly, I think is so incredibly important, because I couldn't do that. I mean, nobody in my family would be able to do that. And yet here we rely on these people every single day to deliver these benefits. And we're willing to pay hundreds of dollars for a phone or a gadget or a device, you know, based on that expertise. I really do think that it's time that we rethink this relationship that we have with our farmers in this country and figure out how to elevate them to the status of CEO of this farm and compensate them for the generations of experience that they're delivering to our country.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, and that's another element of Driscoll's that's quite unique. The way we work with these 700 farmers is that we do not pay them to do anything. They are not on a contract per se. Do we have some kind of contractual relationship? What we have is we have a business arrangement where we are truly partners around success in the marketplace. And the way that works is that we share the revenue that comes back. So we don't guarantee them a price. We don't guarantee them a profit. What we guarantee them is a high percentage of all the revenue that comes back. So the more revenue we can generate, the higher price we can get, the more valued our product is, the more successful the farmer is. You know, the more successful we are too, okay, and vice versa. And so if we can agree that the ways we succeed in the marketplace is to delight consumers, it is not only Driscoll's job, it's also the farmer's job, is to make sure we delight. So where genetics and varieties, number one. Number two is, how do you farm those varieties, right? So we talk about is easy to ruin a perfectly good strawberry by farming it incorrectly. You know, water too much, fertilizer too much, you know, mishandle it in the supply chain or whatever. But the farming is the second most important part of delivering delight. And so by having a business model where we are sharing in that success in the marketplace, we are giving a tremendous incentive to the farmer to make sure that he or she does a really good job of also delivering on the promise of delight. And without that, they just get less revenue and less success. So there are also ways to create incentives in the system for the farmer to make sure that the farmer is thinking about the consumer. And I would say in a lot of crops and a lot of commodities, the farmer is really disconnected from the consumer. And that's particularly true in a lot of the sort of major commodities. You know, the farmer is, the whole thing is just set up around a price, okay, to some middleman or a processor, as opposed to being set up to, okay, well, what does success in the marketplace look like with the consumer? And the more we can create that link between the farmer and the consumer in financial terms, the better likelihood we have of success on the farm, but also the consumer gets what the consumer should get. You know, delicious, healthy foods, okay, not just berries, but all sorts of things.
Wow. That is, to me, one of the best ways that I have heard really ever the challenges with our current incentive system set up with commodity crops versus where we need the incentives to be. That really, for anyone listening, I mean, I think that that notion of how it the incentive really has to be shared between the farmer and the consumer is so spot on and would drive a much healthier success across the platform. I want to dive into one aspect of that. Driscoll's has both organic organic berries and berries that are farmed conventionally. And, you know, one of the things that drew me to wanting to learn about organic was actually when spending time in the Salinas Valley, where, you know, obviously you guys are and really learning from the farmers there, but also about the health of their of the harvesters and the people doing the work, as we've been talking a lot about here. So I'm curious right now, you know, I appreciate, and as a nutritionist, my dietitian hat says, if I can get somebody to eat berries, that is a win, to make that choice more often. But there are many reasons where I want, both for the future of, our soil and our water and people's health and these sorts of things, I want more organic berries available. What are you seeing in the organic space around your, you know, for the organic berries? Where are you right now, and where are you guys headed?
Yeah, I mean, so we've been like you for quite some time, and actually 15 years ago, about 15, 20 years ago, we decided to get into the organic space. We knew consumers were going there. We knew that we were actually going to be a better company. Our growers are going to be better growers if we could learn to be really good at organics. And so we actually started out with the ambition that maybe we should just convert all our berries to organics. Now, I think that's a lesson there that, one, we were very naive. We didn't really know what we didn't know. And two is, you know, you can't forget to listen to consumers. So it turns out in berries that, you know, growing organic berries is quite a bit more expensive because of the inputs and the lower productivity. And so, you know, we were really going to eliminate a lot of consumers from our category if we dropped the conventional. So in the end, we decided that, no, we're going to give consumers what they want. And so we have both organic and conventional. But today, almost 25% of our business is in organic and is growing much faster than the conventional, almost three times faster than the conventional business. So that's the space where consumers want to be. That's where we're going. And, you know, we're going to go where the consumers want to be, and we're really excited about that. And there are these other benefits, okay, that we don't often talk about, which is because it's harder, more difficult to farm organics, we actually become better farmers. And that is a really tremendous side benefit, because then even in our conventional business, when we then have challenges there, whether it's pests or whatever is happening to us, you know, we actually know how to fight it. And sometimes we know how to fight it in more natural ways than the way we historically did it. So we see this much greater benefit, you know, so internally in our own operations from having made this choice. But in the end, for us, it's about, this is what consumers are asking for, and it's our job to deliver it. You know, we got to go and meet the consumers where the consumers want to be.
Wow. I mean, I appreciate the honesty in so much of what you just said about how by working towards this goal of growing more of the berries organic, you actually became better farmers. And I feel like we could book a whole nother podcast just to dive into that, because my brain immediately goes to soil health practices and water conservation and water infiltration, all these amazing things that would be impacting your 700 growers. But we're going to focus on keeping this tight, and I am curious. We're going to dive into this kind of rapid fire set of questions we have for all of our guests. And I'm really curious what your answer is to this first one. What is the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
Oh, you know, I think anybody that's had a long career and by probably most measures, you know, a successful career, it's never a straight line. You know, you will hit significant speed bumps along the way in your career. And I think for me, the biggest sort of lesson I've learned is that it's really, what do you do with that? It is in that moment you learn more about yourself, you learn more about what you got to change, you learn more about your business, is really when you hit those obstacles or speed bumps along the way. And, you know, it's difficult to get derailed when that happens. And so when that's happened to me, you know, I sort of have probably sort of this internal fortitude that, you know, I want to show myself and I want to show others that I can overcome that. And so I always encourage people that are early on in their careers saying, hey, it's okay to take chances and don't be afraid that it goes wrong. Just go in with the mindset that, you know, you need to learn from it. And so we try to do that with a lot of our younger people here at Driscoll's, is really push them into areas where they would not naturally want to go, but really with the idea that they're going to learn. And hopefully we're there to catch them and support them, you know, and create a network underneath. You know, that doesn't always happen to an individual. But I would say, to me, that's probably, you know, the biggest learning in my career.
Oh, I love it that you really encourage people outside of their comfort zone, because it is where change happens and growth happens. And it's great to hear that the culture of the company really encourages that. Our second question, you may have already answered this earlier, actually. What is the greatest opportunity that you see in this movement?
Well, I mean, I think the greatest opportunity is that we can make change happen, okay, in a, I think, a really positive way. And so whether that is for, you know, whether that happens at an individual level or whether it happens at an organizational level, you know, I think that's, you know, embrace change, okay, and then use that change to make something positive happen. And I think you're seeing that in the food movement. I don't think you guys wouldn't have your podcast if it wasn't happening, because, you know, people are paying attention. And so I think that's really, really helpful, okay? And so, but again, I think it's a bit the same thing as my first point, is that you still have to embrace the change. And that's not it's not a natural instinct for human beings, okay? We like that there's no change, okay? But if we learn to embrace it, you know, really, really positive things can come out of that.
Well, you might be my answer to this next question. Thank you for that. This question, who inspires you and why?
Well, I've always sort of been a history, you know, buff, okay? And so, you know, just sort of a little bit of a traditional answer, okay? But so I love Winston Churchill. I've been to his home in Chartwell in the south of England. I went to his war room at, you know, Whitehall in London, and I've read most of the books that have been written about him, okay? And but I think, you know, what I really admire is, you know, a little bit what I talked about is your career can really derail, and his life could have derailed so many times early on in his life, but he had this fortitude and he had this sort of inner strength to go off. And I think he's probably, you know, while he was a great speaker, he was really good about internalizing things and figuring things out. Okay, and I'm that way, you know, I'm definitely an introvert, okay, and that's where I get my energy from. And so I admire that ability to go off and think things through and then come back with a new plan. And he sort of did that over and over and over again in his life, okay? And, you know, most people, of course, focus on his successes, okay? I focus more on, you know, his struggles throughout his life and then what he did with that. And so, yeah. Anyway, he has always been a hero of mine.
Awesome. And I don't know if you watched The Crown, but I just love what they've been doing season after season with really showing... Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes there, as you're saying, there's been, you know, plenty of things that have celebrated him throughout, and, you know, oh, this quote and that quote, you know, but really giving insight into his struggles and when he really did fail, how he could reinvent himself and step forward. So, yeah, that's awesome. So thinking, it's probably a 180 from that with this current Congress. What one message would you send to Congress?
I would say, hey, pass the Farm Worker Modernization Act. I mean, this is so important. If we want fresh fruits and vegetables to be produced in the United States for the next generation, we need to solve this problem. And this is really critical. I think in this country, we have the luxury of being a food net exporter. But if we do not solve the crisis that currently exists on our farms in the United States, we will become a net food importer. And if you go to countries where that is the truth, you know that that is one of their biggest concerns. And so we could create a massive problem for ourselves as a country if we're not really thoughtful and do not act quickly to solve this problem. And the good news is that there is a proposal there. It's not perfect, but it goes a long way towards solving the problems. And so I would ask Congress to act on that and act on it right away.
I want to chime in here really quickly because I could not agree more. I think food security is national security and national security is food security. And when we become dependent as a net importer, it is opening us to so many challenges that we can't yet foresee. And so to really echo what Soren is saying here, for people that are listening, how they can participate in ways that they can engage is contact your local congressman and make sure that you let them know that you are really behind the Food Modernization Act for the farm worker.
Yeah, and we'll do our, we will definitely post a link or find that through social media. Soren, do you know what the time frame is? Like, is it going to them? Well, obviously everybody's going away for the holiday, but is it sort of on the docket for the House for the new year?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a chance that the House could vote on it this year. A little busy these days.
Right, okay. Right.
So, with other things, but it actually is that far along. It's out of committee already. And it has broad bipartisan support. I think there are a little bit more than 50 co-sponsors right now, and is almost even Republican and Democrat, a few more Democrats, but it's almost even in the co-sponsorship. So I think that bodes well for that it will make it out of the House. I think the bigger question is the Senate even going to take it up? Okay, and so, you know, and that's, of course, is where things tend to stall out, you know, these days. And so that's where we need action very quickly. First, it's got to get through the House.
Yeah.
Then we need the Senate to really take it up.
You know, it's so interesting. And I residing in D.C. for about 5 years, most recently, I worked with a lot of, more on the individual level as my clients, but I worked with a lot of different representatives. And, you know, one of the good reminders is that they're all eating, you know, so at the end of the day, like something like this, I mean, if we can take that step forward, and not only are they all eating, I don't think that there is a state, maybe I'm wrong, so whoever out there wants to correct me, but I don't think there's a state in this country that doesn't have a farmer. And so I think that what you're talking about is something that is, you know, should be what their reelection is contingent on, and one that we hold them accountable for. So I am very much pushing for that bipartisan support. And I think when the time comes, we need to be pretty vocal about forcing the Senate to consider this one. So we will, again, do whatever we can to help on that part. And to conclude, Robin and I took a bet on this one. So we'll see where we are, where we net out. But if you were a food, what would you be?
Well, can we agree that wine is food?
Yes.
So, okay. Well, then I would be red wine.
There you go. All right. We were both wrong, and we love that we are wrong. So that's awesome. Great.
Thanks.
Oh, so why would you be red wine, sir?
You know, I think it's the sort of the complexity of wine, and then the backstory. You know, when you drink a bottle of wine, and so just last night I had this bottle of wine from Rioja in Spain, and it was so surprising. And it's just so different, and it was pretty good, but it made me wonder, you know, what was going on, and so it leads you down the road to inquire about what's going on with your food, and I think in wine they have done a really good job of that. In the rest of the food chain, we haven't done nearly as good a job of that, and so I think that's sort of, I think for a lot of us, be an inspiration to, you know, how can we do a better job of telling our story.
I love that. I love that. And you know, it's interesting. I was in New Zealand earlier this year speaking at the Organic Wine Growers Conference, and that is the leading category for them for organic export is organic wine. Of any other category, apples, anything else, it's wine. And I do think, you know, right now we have this opportunity to really learn best practices from around the world and see what's working and where we can adopt and employ some of these better practices. And for everything that you've laid out today, Soren, with Driscoll's, the work that you guys are doing. It is so incredibly impressive, and I'm so grateful that you took the time. Again, to echo, this Farm Workforce Modernization Act, it's bipartisan, which is awesome because very few things are right now. And we would really hope to be able to toast and, you know, lift a glass of wine with you when this thing passes.
Same here.
Yes, I can. And I can think of no better place. And hopefully we'll see you at the Organic Produce Network at the summit this summer, where we definitely love to toast and see that our farmers are being taken better care of and supported, not just, you know, with these policies. So thank you so much. Thank you again to the Organic Produce Network for facilitating this connection. And I just want to say a big thank you to Driscoll's, to the farmers, and also to those that found their way towards bringing you in, Soren, because I think your leadership is just game changing. I'm really, really excited to see. And as somebody who has tried her best to work with different universities to bring in better options, I'd love to see berries on all college campuses. So whatever we can do together on that part, let's get our dietitians and our Driscoll's together and make sure that that's happening, because that would be an incredible way to help our students, you know, just get and stay healthy at such a key point in their lives.
Well, thank you very much, and it's definitely been my pleasure.
Thanks, Soren. Thanks, ladies. Another great podcast. Always learning so much on this show. So many different types of guests. So many guests with passion. Every guest we have on here has passion. Passion to change the world through food and health and fitness, and really inspires me to try and be healthier and try and take action. And I hope it inspires everyone listening as well, because there's so many people trying to do good for the world. And if we get behind everyone, I know we can make the world a better place and go onwards and upwards. So keep listening to the show. I'm loving the show. We've got more exciting guests coming to the podcast this year, or next year now. So happy holidays to everyone. I hope you're going to have a great time. And we'll be back in the new year, ready to go and giving you more knowledge and things to think about. Happy holidays, everyone.